Hi, this is Nick from Washington, D.C., over in the US of A. This is the podcast for the newsletter for the SVOPA. Hope you enjoy it.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the SVOPA Autumn Newsletter. It's Joe here, and with me is Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Joe. How's it been going?
All right, thanks.
Yeah, we've been quite busy over the last few months, haven't we? Launching the podcast, which is a monthly thing which we've started doing with interviews and articles of interest, not just on the school, but general sight loss as well, haven't we?
Yeah, we'd really like everybody to start listening to it because it comes out every month. And Michael will give you details of how you can access it for yourselves.
Yeah, it's quite straightforward. I know a lot of people have got iTunes and iPhones and iPods and things. If you have, you can just search in the iTunes store for SVOPA and that will come straight up. And you can subscribe to that. It's quite straightforward. Any problems, my number's at the end of the podcast, give me a call. Also, the main website you'll find things is www.svopa.podbean, which is podbean.com, and you'll find all the feeds on there. And also, we do put them out on Facebook as well, and that's linked to our Twitter account as well. So that's at SVOPA on the Twitter, and facebook.com/SVOPA Liverpool on Facebook, and you can like us on there. And we're always having chats, aren't we, Joe, about deaf things?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, things that you remember from school. And speaking of which, we want recordings from you as well, don't we? We've got one coming up on this newsletter from Louise Townsend with her memories from school. And she's actually recorded it for us and sent it in, and she's left her contact details for people to get in touch with her. So if there's anybody else who wants people to get in touch with them, either via Facebook or give out your phone numbers or addresses, then we're happy to put it out there so that you can get in touch with old friends and make new ones, hopefully.
And we've done a number of interviews, which we're going to share a few little sections of on here. We want you to get a feel of the podcast, but we're going to put a couple of interviews and things on in full as well, which the guys who've listened to them will have already heard, but enjoy them again. So things that aren't on here which you can listen to are interview with Ian Beverley. We've got an interview coming on next month as well with Shelley Roberts, who was Shelley Bembo, and we're doing sport at the moment, as you can imagine, so we've had a couple of good things on there. But we're going to bring in a couple of things which we've done over the last few months, and we're going to start off with a little section from an interview with Dave Beckett. Over to you, Dave. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening, Michael. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks, mate.
Good. And you're living in Salford at the moment?
Yep, I've been living in Salford all my life, unfortunately.
Oh, it's not that bad. We were there yesterday and the car was in one piece when we left, so I can't really complain.
Well, that's because you was at my house, Mike, you don't mind.
Yeah, true. So, it's quite a while since you went to school, isn't it?
Don't rub it in. I left, I think it was towards, well, I think it was summer, would it have been July 1980, I think, or 81. It's quite, forgive my memory. I think I started there 77.
Right. And you were in the juniors for a year, I think you said, didn't you? And so
I was in the juniors. It wasn't full, I can't remember if it was a full year or I was near getting on for 12 when I started St. Vincent's. And I was in the who was she? What was her name?
Mrs. Pope.
Mrs. Cunliffe.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Cunliffe's class. I don't know if it was there for a full year or whether it was a matter of months. I can't remember.
Right. And how did you find that change? Because you've gone from sort of a mainstream school, had you, to St. Vincent's and become a boarder. So how did you find the change from that?
Oh, to be honest, Michael, pretty horrendous, really. As you say, I mean, like, I know, like, you started there when you was a toddler.
Yeah, six.
I was kind of getting on for being a teenager, so I'd never been away from home before. It was terrifying. I can remember my first day when my parents, you know, took me down, and when they said to him, like, okay, Mr. and Mrs. Beckett, you know, you can go home now. You'll be fine. And I just remember breaking down and clinging hold of my mother and saying, I want to go home. But obviously I couldn't.
Yeah, we all thought that as well.
I mean, I think I thought that every day since, you know what I mean, really. But no, it was pretty horrendous. And I even remember, made it a little bit worse. I mean, I got on with the bloke afterwards. He was, you know, we got on with him fine. But my first night at St. Vincent's, I was in Sister Rita's dormitory in her group, Rushton, I think it was called. And I wasn't in the main dormitory. I was put in, I don't know if people remember, whether it's changed now, I don't know. There was a room at the end of that corridor where it had two beds and a sewing room. And they put me in with, you could say it was one of the school kind of bully stroke mischief makers. I won't mention his name. Probably it's not a good idea. But I can remember him that night. He was, you know, I was terrified and upset, and he'd been there from being a kid, a youngster, and he was playing up. And I remember Sister Rita, she went and got Joe Lampton, who kind of part of his job, I suppose, was like scared the living daylights out of the lads, amongst other things. And he came to the room, he told this other lad off. And I don't know whether that was, I wasn't deliberately smiling. I think I was just, well, I was scared. And he just turned to me and he said, you know, I'll wipe that smile off your face, an old young man, if, you know, whatever. And I was terrified. You know, it was my first night away from home. You know, I was upset already. And I thought, my God, I think I'd read and Tom Brown's School Days. And I thought, you know, the next thing, they'd be roasting me in front of a fire. luckily, I've got to say that never happened, Michael.
Yeah.
But I've got to say that, you know, Joe, after that, once I got settled in, he became my mobility teacher within a couple of years. And then I moved into the lodge eventually. And, you know, we got on great. We got on fine. I went back once. I think it was a year or two after I left school. And, you know, it was fine. But it was just, that was my first, I'd say, frightening moment.
Bit of a baptism of fire then, really, wasn't it, Dave?
Well, yeah, you could, you know, yeah. You couldn't say I was broken in gentle.
Yeah.
If you want to hear the whole of Michael's interview with Dave Beckett, you will find it on the second podcast, along with the whole interview with Georgie Hamari. We have a little bit of that coming up now with Georgie's contact details, as she would like to be a coordinator for the North East and organise events for anybody interested in that area.
One of the things we have mentioned is we're going to be holding some local events, and Georgie is looking to maybe do things in the Northeast. So, Hank, what are you thinking, Georgie?
Yeah, as you know, the membership is scattered the length and breadth of the country, and it's not always easy for those who want to participate in social events to be able to do so, whether it's financial or travelling or whatever. So what I thought was being on the committee and living in the Northeast, that it might be a good idea if the membership of the Northeast wanted that we organise some local events, maybe go out for a meal or go to the theatre or whatever. So I thought that if I give my contact details out and whoever wants to contact me and we can arrange something, I'll do all the organising. All they've got to do is turn up and enjoy. Then I thought it might be a good idea.
That's a lovely idea, Georgie. That's yeah. Really good.
It is. Do you want to say the best ways of people getting in touch with you?
Yeah, sorry. Right. I've got email address, which is Georgie, G-E-O-R-G-I-E, Hamari, @live.co.uk. Now, that's my personal email. And I'm also going to give you... Oh, and it's all low-key, sorry. I'm also going to give you my mobile number, which is 079-855-79629. That is 079-855-79629. Okay?
That's it, guys. Get in touch and see what could be organised up, you know, in the Northeast. Thanks very much, Georgie, for coming on, spending the time, having a chat with us. Really appreciate it. And, yeah, please, guys, get in touch with Georgie and we can organise some great events for the future in your area and beyond. Don't forget to check out the whole interview. There's some really good and some quite funny parts of the interview as well, and some things that make you think. Some of the things she stood up for herself and done a really good job. So we're going to move on now to some news items.
And now, here are some news items.
It is with great sadness that I have to announce the death of Maria Taylor, née Christie, who died on the 26th of July. She died unexpectedly and suddenly whilst at home. Our thoughts and good wishes go out to family and friends and all those who knew her.
Josie Lynch, who used to work at St Vincent's for many years and then moved to Bradbury Fields and worked there for a number of years as well, has left to move to Ireland to look after family members. So we'd like to say thank you to Josie for all her hard work over the years, and we hope that she'll be able to return to see us, perhaps for the reunions in the future.
We had a really good year this year, didn't we, Joe, at the reunion?
We did, it was fantastic.
Well, so we had a good turnout as well, and if this year's anything to go by, next year's going to be absolutely amazing.
We did, we had a full complement of people stay. We used all the beds that they allocated us, didn't we, to stay overnight.
We did, so you're going to have to book early for next year. Date coming up later. But we asked Brian if he would do a little report as well on the reunion, which has been on the website since about July, but he's also kindly recorded it as well for us. So I'm going to play that now for you. If you listen to episode one, there's actually a full interview with Brian and also with Chelsea and you know, their thoughts and their feelings on what happened at the reunion. So do check that one out as well.
I last attended a school reunion back in 2001, some 11 years ago. When I heard about the one for this year, on the CD newsletter back in December of last year, I was not sure if I would or could go. My first thought was the cost, train fares and accommodation. Then it was the logistics of travelling from Catterick Garrison to Liverpool. However, I am now so pleased that I did make that effort to attend. I had mixed emotions as I arrived at the school in the black cab that took me and four others from Lime Street Station. The outside looked very much the same as I remembered it, and I can still remember that first day back in September 1970 when I first arrived. Stepping through the front door brought a wave of anticipation. It may be a strange thing to say, but I felt like I was coming home. My memories came flooding back. Even the smell returned. The one that told me that I was back at school. I was not sure how this afternoon was going to go. 11 years since I last attended a reunion, and 35 years since I left school. Would I see anyone I knew, from my class, or from the years closest to when I left? Luckily, or not, depending on how you view it, one of the first people I spotted was Frank McFarlane. As a pupil, I feared him, but I also had an admiration and respect for him, especially towards the end of my time at school. Him being the one of the first people that I recognised, strangely, put me at ease. And then I saw some more faces who, although I did not instantly recognise, once I had spoken to them, I remembered them so well, including someone who, as a new entrant at school, I both looked up to and really quite fancied. The first part of the afternoon saw us gathering in the dining room. To see it now was so different from my day. Gone are the dark rectangular tables and the old-style light fittings that hung from the ceiling in sets of three or five. The ceiling was now much lower, and recessed fluorescent lighting and light-coloured circular tables gave the room a lighter, brighter and airier feel. The room soon filled, and it was clear that this year had produced a really good turnout. There was a good age spread as well, with those who left in the late 50s right through to a few who had only left less than 5 years ago. There was much greeting and meeting, and all were having a good time. I found a fair number of former friends from school who I knew. It was not easy. I never have been good at remembering faces and names, so the frequent "Who are you?" and "When did you leave?" proved to be most useful, but it yielded some wonderful people. I even got to make a couple of new friends as well, and that, for me, was good. Around 3:30, we had the annual general meeting, which Michael tells me was going to be held in the conference room. I didn't know the school even had one. However, numbers prevented that, and we stayed in the dining room for the meeting, which lasted less than 40 minutes. After that, Michael arranged a tour of the school as it was used today, but it was still nice to visit parts of the school that I knew with their different uses back in the mid-70s. Much has changed, fewer pupil numbers, and the fact that the school now deals with visually impaired children who also have additional challenges means that the style and type of education is so very different. Our journey around also showed the problems that the school has today, as a number of areas are no longer used and were sadly off limits to us for safety reasons. But what was good is that many had such vivid memories of different parts of the building that we visited. Many stories were told of former classmates and things that had happened in different areas of the school that we were able to visit. After the tour, it was back to the dining room for the buffet tea. If there was one thing I forgot to do that afternoon, it was to take some photographs of the spread of food that had been laid out for us. Words cannot really do it justice. There was a fine selection of sandwiches, savouries, which would be able to cater for most tastes, and a choice of cheesecake or apple crumble as a dessert. What more could one ask for? After the buffet, I went outside to take some photographs of my own of the building. I wanted my own private memories of the building, just in case this was the last reunion that I would be able to attend. It was wet and dark, so although I was happy with the photos that I got, they were not as good as I would have liked. For the evening, we moved into the conference room, where a bar had been set up, and the rest of the evening was spent drinking and chatting, and swapping news and stories of time at school. Later on, we had some fine entertainment from a number of people who were brave enough to sing for us. I think it is fair to say that for those who were there, a good time was had by one and all. I know a few stayed up late into the night, but I drifted off just after 1 a.m., happy and contented that I had made the effort to attend. Sunday brought us to breakfast and the parting farewells as we set off on our long journeys home. There was one last treat, a minibus tour around the city of Liverpool. Sadly, the weather had conspired to be unpleasant, so we were not able to have much of a walk about and stop in the city. It was a wonderful weekend and one that I shall remember for quite a long time.
Right, thanks for that, Brian. As Michael said, if you listen to podcast one, you'll hear the whole of Brian's interview, which is great stuff. And next, we've got permission from the RNIB to release Tom Glass's book, Who's Afraid of the Dark, read by Gordon DeLew, as a podcast. So we're going to do that over the next 12 months or so.
Yeah, and we're going to be starting that hopefully in the next 2 weeks. So you do need to check out the podcast feed, the iTunes or the www.svopa.podbean.com, or obviously the Facebook and Twitter feeds. And we're going to release about 2 chapters of a month in between the standard podcasts. So, and again, if you need help, give me a shout and I can help you with that.
Who's Afraid of the Dark by Tom Glassie. This book is produced by RNIB.
RNIB, supporting blind and partially sighted people.
Tom Glassie attended St. Vincent's School during the mid-1960s. His book tells a very caring story of his time at school, the emotional things he went through to to actually go all the way from home. He lived on the Isle of Man, and the trauma of going to and from school and leaving his family at home. It captures a lot of the feelings that many people who attended St. Vincent's might have felt. He also talks very candidly about the staff there, although I think some of it might have been well embellished with the course of time, and of course names have been changed to protect the innocent. But it is a tremendous book. I met Tom only a few years ago, just before he died, and at that time his book had quite a wide distribution, including being on RNIB's reading list. His wife very generously agreed for the book to be donated and any copies for it to be donated to the Past Pupils Association. I strongly recommend the book. It's a great read, and Tom's a good writer, and he captures a lot of the feelings really well. Hope you enjoy it.
Why not email us at podcast@svupa.co.uk?
We're going to move on now to an interview from the last podcast with Jeanette Barclay. Most people may know her as Jeanette Edwards. And she was lucky enough at the Olympic Games to be a games maker at Old Trafford. So we're going to have a chat about school, about what she's done since, and especially about her experiences of being a games maker. I mean, I really enjoyed the Olympics this year. I don't know if you guys did as well.
Hiya, Jeanette.
Hiya.
First off, do you want to tell us what year you went to St. Vincent's and a bit about your time there?
Yep, I went in 1986 till 1990. So I was actually the year below Alan. It was quite a good experience. I can't really not be at St. Vincent. Sorry, your dog's snoring. I try not to, but she just sounds merrily asleep there. So some of my dislikes about St. Vincent's, there weren't really major dislikes, but was the running around the track. I used to hate that. There was always one flagstone that used to catch you in the corner there. Or if you stopped at the junior department just to have a breather, there was always some teacher that saw you and shoved you on. So, I didn't like the running track at all. Hated sports day, completely hated that. It was always cold and wet, so I just also had miserable memories of sports day. And some of the school meals were a little bit ropey, to say the least. But they were only my real negatives. Not a lot there. My positives was the instrumental. I used to love that on a Thursday. I used to like going playing the French horn there with Mr. Wilson. I used to like being part of the band, so it was that was really, I have fond memories of that. The Worcester Gala, don't know if anybody remembers those. I was the sad old that did used to enjoy Worcester.
It was a good day. I used to enjoy it.
It was, even though we always got beat every year, it was still still a good day. Still a ride out, wasn't it?
It was.
It was.
I used to enjoy that. All the build-up around Christmas. Used to have fond memories of the carol services and some of the nativity things that we used to do, and the Christmas dinner where you used to have a member of staff on your table and you also used to hope it was the one that you really liked, you know, not the one you didn't get with, you know. So I used to love the Christmas dinners. What other positive? Oh, yeah, sitting on the hill. While the boys used to play cricket, I used to like sitting on the mound there. That used to be good fun summer memories, really, of sitting on the mound with all the cut grass for all those that have hay fever. The taxi outing, I used to like the taxi outing. I remember where we all used to queue up down the corridor and your little pair.
New Brighton, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, oh, she used to go on the bumper cars. And the school discos, I don't know if any of you remember those. But
oh, yeah.
You look back and you think, well, we really like that, you know?
Yeah.
The good old school discos. So I've got quite a few fond memories, really, of St. Vincent's. It certainly shaped your childhood anyway.
So what have you done since leaving school, Jeanette?
Okay, well, I'm probably classed as your biggest failure. No, not really. I left school, then I went to college, to my local college, Mainstream College. I did a BTEC National Diploma in Caring Services, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And then I sort of got a bit of duff career advice, really, and then went on to University of Central Lancashire, where I did a degree in social politics and administration. But part of that degree should have been the DIPS work, because I always wanted to be a social worker. But unfortunately, on the first day that we all rolled up, we all sat there in anticipation and they said they'd drop the DIPS work. So you just felt 500 people's hearts sink. And oh my God, well, we're on the wrong course. So we muddled through it and came out the other end. And then I met my husband, got married, had two delightful children. So you can imagine that sort of put job opportunities on the line for a short while. And then unfortunately became a single parent as well. But that's another podcast in its own right. So I've struggled to actually find full-time employment, but I do a lot of voluntary work. So I do an awful lot for guide dogs. One experience that I had was we went to trekking in Tanzania in aid of guide dogs. So we went to do some fundraising, but it was a life-changing experience, really, to go over there and see people that live in such dire situations where their only prized possession is a tin mug, you know, next to a fire in a house that's made of sort of cattle poo and straw, you know, really brings it home, really. With a big bang, you come home and then you walk into Tesco and there's all the Halloween and stuff and bonfire night stuff and you just think, oh, gosh, what a waste of money. So it was a very sobering process. We actually went with a group of able-bodied people, and they obviously didn't know that we couldn't see until we sort of got there. But it's amazing how caring they are in Africa too, and how fascinated they are with our white skin. And they kept touching us in very remote places that tourists don't go to. So they kept like touching your skin because it was white, and obviously they thought it must have felt different or something. So it was an absolute amazing experience. Or you'd squat behind a bush to do what you had to do, and giraffes would be walking by. Or I remember being on the, well, we had a loo that was in a tent, and they dug a hole in the ground, and that was your toilet. But you did have a tent, and all these jackals were running around outside. And of course, jackals precursed lions because they scavenge off them. So I'm sitting there thinking, oh God, I just had visions of Jurassic Park. That's all I got. Yeah, so it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then coming back from there, obviously, I went more into doing more voluntary work for guide dogs. So I'm a tour guide up at the centre there. I also do the reception as well when Katie's not around. They always ring me up, can you do 4 days next week? You know, all right then. So, again, it's good experience, really. It's a good thing to put on your CV. And obviously, I do the talks. So, like last week, I was doing talks with some midwives. It wasn't guide dog related, but it was all about being pregnant and visually impaired, you know. So, again, there's always something comes off something else, isn't there? So, you should branch out in more directions. But I would like it to lead to something that paid, you know, rather than everything being voluntary. But never mind. And that's where we're at today, really, you know.
Fantastic. So you were a games maker at the Olympics.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us how you got into that, how you found out about it?
Yeah. The Olympics has always been close to my heart. When I left school, I'm sure a lot of people remember, I also used to be horsey mad. I actually bought my first horse when I left school, which led to four, like they do. And I used to compete regularly every weekend. We'd load up a horse box and be off to some show. So I did used to compete a lot in dressage. But unfortunately, 2 days before I was due for selection for Team GB, I had a very bad riding accident and I broke my coccyx in the bottom of my spine. So I didn't really get on a horse for about a year and a half after that. I think my confidence had gone, and plus I physically couldn't, you know. So I sort of missed my opportunity, really, and turned to carriage driving instead, believing it must be safer. so unfortunately, I did miss my opportunity, but the Olympics has always been something I've been very fond of because I've always wanted to take part. So I was actually mooching around on the ticket website wanting to get tickets to go down to London. And on the website itself was, have you considered being a games maker? And I thought, oh, I'll have a click on that like you do when you're surfing at midnight. So I click on it and I'll have to fill out the application form, which is really long and convoluted. They wanted to know ins and outs of everything, but it was good. You know, it was manageable. So I completed the application form and submitted it and didn't really think much of it. I didn't think I'd, you know, get anywhere, to be honest. I think it was about 270,000 applicants, so they're quite a lot. So I was quite surprised when I got called to interview. I think that was something like last March. It was quite a long time ago. So we went trundling off up to Media City, Freddie and I, and had a wander around Media City for about an hour trying to find where we were meant to be. All these workmen, you're asking them directions and they don't know, but they work there, so you think they might know. We found our way in the end. We always find our way. So we went for an interview. Again, didn't think any more of it than, you know, well, I've been and I've taken part and got my little wristband to say that I'd sort of been. And then I did get a phone call to say, would you please participate? And obviously, well, the first answer was definitely yes. Yes, I would. I'd love to. So we went to a couple of training sessions, orientation and things like that, getting to look around the stadium. Freddie was told under no circumstances was he allowed to go near that field. A football pitch that all these groundskeepers was lovingly pouring and dosing, and they cut twice before a football match, I believe, and they dote over their grass. And he's going, oh, grass, I could go and dig a few holes in that. I know that's a golf course for you, mister, you know. So he was told not to look, not to sniff, not to even consider the grass, of which he was most affronted, but never mind. So we went and we did a couple of training days, which was good. And then we went and collected our uniform. And then obviously our accreditation as well, which was a huge, great big ID that sort of fills your whole body.
And go on, you've got to tell us about the uniform, Jeanette.
Yeah, all the delightful. We'll start from the bottom up, shall we? Well, we've got delightful, dodgy orange and grey trainers with red shoelaces, but they are Adidas, so to believe they're quite reasonable in quality. Which everybody, you could tell after a couple of days, everybody was limping in them because they rubbed in various positions, you know. So. We then got a delightful pair of grey socks, We then got some beige trousers, which are not flattering to anybody, I don't think. Beige never looks good. Never looks good, does it? Not with a black dog, especially.
No.
Hide the drool well, though, not with me. So beige trousers. Then we got a nice T-shirt that's made of this sort of, it's like nylon-y feeling, quick-dry material. And again, that's aubergine, I believe, or I would call it purple and red. And then we got a matching coat to go with that. Again, it's all designed on the Grenadier Guards, so it was all studs and red and aubergine. And it was quite nice. You know, he did stand out in a crowd. We got a lovely cap again. I managed to not wear the cap because I do have 160 vision in the right eye. And I couldn't actually see when I had this hat on. The peak was so big, you just couldn't see, you know. It was massive. I had a never suit hat, so it was awful, this peak. You could dig holes with it, I tell you. It was like a spade. And then we got a lovely bag, a games maker bag that was supposed to put all your possessions in, you carried around with you everywhere with your little handbook and things like that, and your incident report cards and all that sort of gubbins that you do. Most importantly, it had Freddy's dog food in, and that was about it. It was full, you know. So that was the uniform.
So what jobs did you have to do?
I worked for Workforce Operations. Which meant that I dealt with all the workforce. So they came in the morning, they checked in with us. So you would scan their ID with these like barcode scanners and check them in that they are actually who they say they are. They match their ID. Then you'd issue them with the most important thing, which was the luncheon vouchers. You know, if you worked 6 hours, you got one. If you worked 10 hours, you got two. So you were very lucky. Everybody prayed for two shifts so that they could have two 10 hours so they could have two luncheon vouchers. Travel cards. We issued travel cards. We also issued freebies as well. So every day that you turned up, you actually got a work incentive, really. So it was freebies. So they were like pin badges and journals and all sorts of different bits and bobs, really, just to give you a bit of incentive. But they weren't on sale to obviously the public. They are sort of games maker stuff, so it was nice to that they got something that was unique for them. It was also helped with inquiries as well, so if anybody was lost, it was our responsibility to show them where they needed to go. If anybody had anything that they needed to report as lost or stolen, they came to us first. And it was a lot like working on reception, really. You know, that sort of scenario. We also did quizzes as well. Ones that they couldn't Google, you know, we tried to think up things that they couldn't Google, and newsletters as well. So it was our job as well, if it was somebody's birthday, to make sure that they got a birthday card, an Olympic birthday card. So there were lots of different jobs, really. You know, you were kept busy. You would think that, you know, you would be quite bored, but you weren't. We weren't at all. You were definitely kept on your toes. I also had the opportunity to go onto the field of play as well, which was amazing. So I got to see the England versus Cameroon game and the Canada versus USA women's football game, which they were really dirty players, I've got to admit. They were not nice to each other. I know a lot about football, but they really weren't nice to each other. I don't think legging each other up is part of the game. So it was amazing because I'm not really a big football fan, to be honest, and it was the first game that I'd ever attended. So it gave me a big appreciation, really, of how hard they actually do work running up and down that field. It's quite a big field, really.
Yeah.
Just to walk around it is exhausting, let alone running up and down it. So it was a wonderful experience. So like when we had the photographers again, we held the rope in front of them so that they couldn't get too near the players, you know. So just little jobs, I suppose, that are not, don't seem important, but were important enough that they needed doing, you know. So
sounds fantastic. It sounds like you really enjoyed it.
Oh, I did. It was a wonderful experience. I really felt a part of it, of a team. There was only six in my team, so we got to know each other very well. But I think people that do sort of volunteer are the same sort of ilk of person. So it was, you know, you had lots of really nice characters in life to talk to. You know, you were never short of anybody to talk to. So it was great just being a part of it and to say that you were there, you know, and you really did feel, you know, obviously Old Trafford had all been dressed up in the Olympic finery, you know, so it was, you really did feel that you were at the Olympics, you know, and you were trying to get on the tram going back into Manchester and people were lost and didn't know where they were going. So then you carried on your games maker duty of trying to instruct everybody which hotel they were trying to get back to, you know. And it's quite funny because when you're trying to talk to somebody and they've had a few too many to drink, you know, it doesn't quite make sense your directions, does it? You know? I don't know, but it was fun. And Freddie said hello to the police horses every time he went past, as much as say, "Oh, you're still working, I'm still working too." Cause I had a couple of long shifts. I had to laugh because two police horses stopped to let him cross the road, and he was like, "Yeah, thanks, mate. You know, see you tomorrow." You know, sort of got that sense of feeling off him, you know. But we had a couple of long shifts, you know, so we did a couple of 16-hour days. So bless him, he was found catnapping in the day. He loved people. He's a people dog, so he loved the meeting and the greeting. Very much loved the meeting and the greeting. So when we had 69,000 fans one night, it was he was in his element. Oh, great! All these people to talk to. But he was a trooper. He didn't let me down. He was absolutely exceptional. His behaviour was wonderful. He was just so spot on. I was proud of him. It was like a proud parent, you know. Fred.
So, right, well, all that's left really is to ask if you want to, do you want to give out any contact details, Jeanette, for anybody who remembers you from school to get in touch or anything?
I'm on Facebook if people are interested in Facebook. I used to be Edwards. I don't know if people might remember me being in Edwards rather than a Barclay.
I do. I remember you at school.
That rings a bell now.
Yeah, and I was the one that spelt it with a Z, so that should ring a bell too.
Yeah.
Spells it with a Z, you know. So, yeah, if people would like to get in contact on Facebook, that'd be great. Obviously, it's Jeanette Barclay, so it's Z-J-E-N-E-T-T. Barclay is in the bank, B-A-R-C-L-A-Y. That'd be great. I'm sure there's a few of you out there that I've not quite got in contact with yet. I've done quite well through with Friends Reunited. That's what started me off getting back in contact with old friends, because that's the sad thing with when you go to special school like that, isn't it? You know, you lose contact with everybody over the years, because in our day they didn't have internet and stuff like that.
No,
they didn't really have computers.
No, not really. The old BBC that they used to wheel in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Gosh.
Yeah. Post-circuit television that used to be the size of the room, you know.
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for your time, Jeanette. It's been really fantastic having a chance to get that insight as well into the Olympics and obviously in what you've done at school and everything in the meantime and the voluntary work. I may have even seen you when I was training the other year at Guide Dog, so you never know.
You never know.
So, yeah, thanks very much, and we will
thanks, Jeanette.
Speak to you again.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye.
Here are some events. Why not come and join us at one, or two, or all of them?
One of the things we are really working on as well as part of the SVOPA team is getting more events, getting people together, you know, at local events or at sort of national things. So a couple of things coming up we'd like to mention to you. If you're around York area, and there is a Site Village exhibition on the 4th of October. I know it's only going to be next week if you're listening to this now. But if you want to go, it's at York University. It runs from 10 till 3:30. I will be there. I know one or two of us will. So drop me a shout at podcast@svopa.co.uk and we'll meet up, have a beer or something to eat afterwards if you want, or just a general chat. And I'll leave my mobile number at the end of the podcast anyway. Also, important date for your diary is the 18th of May next year. That is the date for the reunion. So if you have that ready, and we will start taking bookings for that in the new year. Right, we've got two weekends coming up as well. We've got one in November and one in February. Joe's going to tell us about the one in November.
The Tynmouth break is at the Cliffden Hotel, and it's running from November the 2nd to November the 5th, which is the Monday. It's £45 a night, dinner, bed and breakfast. But if you're a member of the RNIB, you'll get your 10% reduction, making it £40.50. The hotel have also agreed to hold that price if you want to stay for longer, if you're travelling a long way and you'd like to extend your break. We've got about 19 people coming so far. There's myself, there's Michael Allen, your chairman. There's Brian Winter, there's Debbie Cullen, there's Maureen Hoare, Sarah Craig, just to mention a few. Oh, Kath Madden. So, and partners are also welcome, and family, obviously, if you want to bring them along. If you're travelling by train or flying down to Exeter, if you contact the hotel in advance, they will make arrangements to pick you up. Let the hotel know if you have any special dietary requirements. And hopefully some of you will come along and join us and have a really good time. If you want to book, you need to contact the hotel direct on 01626 770052 and quote reference Fishwick.
Thanks, Jo. It's going to be a really good night and good weekend. And I know a few of the people there earlier are actually going to scare some of the natives as well. On the 31st. So there's about 7 or 8 doing that. So that's going to be quite good, but I'm not going down to the 1st. So I'm quite looking forward to flying down. First time flying on my own and with a dog. So it's going to be interesting. Also, next year, we've got on the 22nd of February, is our Gateshead weekend, which is actually about 2 miles, if that, from Newcastle. So it's dead easy to get to from the station. And that's going to be at the Swallow Hotel. And I know quite a lot of visually impaired people have used the hotel. It's a mainstream hotel, but it has been very popular with visually impaired people over time. You need to book directly with them on 0191 477 1105, quoting SVOPA. The price is £35 per person per night, based on half board, bed, breakfast and evening meal, and that's for a twin or a double. Unfortunately, singles are looking at being about £50 per night. Already there's a few of our people from the northeast say they're coming, and I'm coming up, and Angela Mills is also coming as well, so that's already, we've got a few people interested.
And dare we say it, we're looking forward to the end of 2013 with a break at the Belmont Hotel in Llandudno, North Wales. We haven't specifically set aside a date now, but we are looking at hopefully sometime in November. We'd like to make it possibly around the half-term holiday so that anyone who wants to bring their children can do. And Michael would like it if some of the musicians amongst you could come along and make it a nice musical weekend, wouldn't you?
It would be great. We've got some great musicians around the school and from school. And if you actually listen to podcasts, we do play some of their music as part of that as well.
So come on, it's not a huge hotel. Let's see if we can fill it up. We're giving you plenty of notice.
And we have got the price. If we do it in November, it's £35 per person, bed, breakfast and evening meal. And they've only got 27 rooms, so with friends and things, let's try and fill it.
Why not follow us on Twitter at SVOPA?
Right, we're going to play a little bit now from the podcast, including the intro and the ending, which is Over to You.
Right, now we've a new section called Over to You, and we've had Louise Townsend, who some of you may remember from school. She was the person who you should always go to if you wanted info about the soaps. If you'd miss your soaps, Louise was the person to go to. And she's sent in some of her memories and her contact details for anyone who does remember her to get in touch. So here's Louise with her memories of school.
Hi, my name's Louise Townsend from Carlisle. A few of you who are listening to this may remember me from St Vincent's. I went there in 1982 and I left in 1986. I've decided to record some memories, and having had a chat with Jim Moran a few weeks ago, he suggested I did this and it could be put on the Bell newsletter. I have quite a lot of memories of school. One of my main memories was being in my escort group with Sister Anne. And I remember this being a group of people who not only had a sight impairment, but also had another disability as well. So therefore, it had junior girls and senior girls in it, and it was mixed. Sister Anne was lovely in her way, but I can remember she would not stand any nonsense. The people who I can remember being at school with were Gemma O'Connor and her sister Adele, who was a few years below me. Shirley and Caroline Stewart, but although Caroline was a few years above me. Tracy Poole, Dawn Volner, Debbie Davis, Carl somebody, but I can't remember his surname, David McCormack, Heather Wise, and there was another lad called David Starkey who joined us a little bit later on. I think he was from Wolverhampton, I think, if my memory serves me rightly. And the teachers I remember were Mrs. Duffy, Mrs. Doyle, Miss Evans, Mr. Mannings, Mr. MacFarlane, Mrs. Errington. And I remember there was another woman who took over from Mrs. Errington for a while because she was pregnant, I think. Was she called Mrs. Morris or Mrs. Morrison or something like that? And I can remember she was actually quite strict, because there was once when you used to do your running round the track, I was guiding Heather round the track and we're both running together. And we wanted to get our breath back before we actually started running round the track for a second time. Well, of course, while we're getting our breath back, we started to chat, and she said, if you've got time for a chat, you can start running. So that was the end of that. One girl I do remember who was in my escort with me was somebody called Vanessa, and she used to throw temper tantrums every morning because she didn't want to get out of bed. And I remember being Bernadette Green was in the group as well, and Diane Wade, and Andrea Turner, the name just skipped me for a while there. They were both in the juniors. And then there was Nikki Madison later on, and Nicola, another Nicola as well, but I can't remember what her surname was. Simpson, Nicola Simpson, that's it. That's just come to me as well. And they were both in the juniors. One thing I do remember when I was at school was the first year I was there, there was actually a fire in the lounge at my escort, because I was watching TV one night, and then Karen, Miss Karen, who was on night duty for a while, was helping the junior girls get ready for bed. And I was sat in the lounge on my own, and the TV switched itself off, and then all of a sudden a spark came out the back of it. So I went to tell her, Karen, what had happened, and she shut the door and pulled the plug out and set the fire alarm off. The next thing we hear that is that there'd been a fire actually in the lounge, and we all had to go to the infants' quarters to sleep. The next morning, I remember going back to my school to get my school uniform, and you could smell the smoke as soon as you walked up the stairs. It was horrible. And that day was open day, was like the open day. And Sister Josephine, because my parents came from Carlisle, she used to let me travel home with them after the open day. And so for the reason of... we couldn't live in the group, basically. We all got an extra week summer holiday, because obviously it had to be shut down. And then my last year of school, I ended up ended up moving groups. Well, the group moved to my escort's premises, because my escort got closed down because Sister Anne retired, and everybody else would moved into Keller and Caulfield. And I really enjoyed that, because I could mix with my friends before and after school. I can always remember on a Friday, we used to finish at 1 o'clock on a Friday, and we used to get sandwiches instead of a cooked meal. And then every 5 minutes, Margaret Gaskill used to shout up the stairs for whoever to say that their transport had arrived to take them home. And one thing I do remember, if you went through the Mice Court lounge, you went into, and next to that was the staff room. And then if you went through the staff room, you actually could go across a corridor, and the junior girls' dormitories were just at the end of that corridor. But, and on your right hand side was a staircase, and that staircase was actually led down to the big hall. I mean, the only time I ever used those staircase was, I didn't even realise it was there until my last year, and that was the way I used to go back up to you know, to my school. Whether you were supposed to, I don't know, but nobody ever said anything. I used to remember when you used to have the youth club, and the only money you were allowed to take for the full week was 75 pence. I mean, you wouldn't be able to get much with that now, I don't think. And you could get these little packets of crisps, like Quavers, I think they were, for about 5p, 5 pence. And you could get, like, a bottle of pop, I think, for about 10p, 15p or something. And next door to the youth club, it was the junior boys' playroom, and some of us used to go and watch the television in there. And there was one particular night, I can remember Mr. Mannings was on prep duty, and he always used to stay on after prep and join in the activities. Well, he used to enjoy watching Brookside, and there was one night, I wanted to watch Brookside, but this lad and a couple of others did, but this lad called Dylan didn't want to watch it, so we all got into a bit of an argument over it. And Mr. Mannings walked in and went, "Brookside, please." And as soon as he said that, the TV was just immediately switched over, just like that. And, you know, that was sort of that. I remember doing RE with Miss Evans. And then for a while I did RE with Sister Frances. And from the first couple of years of school, I think it was, I did English with Mr. Mac Farlane. And then, but I was struggled a little bit. So I ended up with about three other people, Debbie Davis, Sean Waiting and Christopher Duggan, were in the small class for English with Miss Burns. And then I think that was, can't remember if it was the second or third year, but I was in a smaller class, you know, all the time, for every lesson that I had except swimming and PE. First of all, it was Mrs. Pace. And then after Mrs. Pace moved to the junior section, Sister Barbara took over that class, and we had every lesson with her. And then in my last year, in my third year, I was in Mr. MacFarlane's form. And in my fourth year, was in Mr. Manning's form. But really, what had happened was, in my first year, my class teacher was Miss Cunningham. And then I think she wasn't there all that long. And then it was Miss Griffiths after that. And I can always remember Miss Griffiths. There was one time Carl was going to chuck a chair at somebody. And I don't know who it was, but he chucked it and it almost hit Miss Griffiths. I don't know whether it actually did or not. I can't really remember that. In my score, I can remember there was two Mrs. Burks. I think there were sister-in-laws, actually. One was the cleaner and the other one used to look after us in the morning. And then when she retired, Joe Burke took over the morning duty, and we got another cleaner called Mrs. Woods. And Mrs. Burns used to look after us at night, but from what I can remember, Mrs. Burns wasn't there that long, because I think she died, actually. So we had a few, you know, members of staff for not for very long, really, at night. And then Mrs. Appleton started, I think in about 84, 85, something like that. Before I go, I would be really interested in hearing from anybody, students and teachers, who were at school and either the same time I was or even before my time. I'd be very interested in hearing from anyone. My contact details are, my email address is louise.townsend, and I will spell that, it's all in lowercase, louise.townson at virgin.net, and my mobile number is 078-766-16268. Look forward to hearing from anyone. Bye for now.
Thanks very much for that, Louise. It was really interesting. It was great to hear from you as well. If there's anyone else got anything you would like to put on like this, just email it in to podcast@svopa.co.uk. If you do want to send something on a CD, I will put an address at the end of the podcast.
Right, that brings us to the end of the autumn newsletter. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope you'll listen to the podcast, which we'll be releasing regularly every month or so.
Yeah, there should be one out in the middle of October, and hopefully the Tom Glassy book will be out before that as well. And what we do need, though, is you guys to contact us, at least with email address, so we can update our address system and we can get you the newsletter, which we try and send out to as many as we can via email to let you know what's coming out. So, you know, drop us an email with that details on as well.
And if you have any problems, get in touch with Michael as well, because he's always happy to help. If you're having problems accessing the podcasts, give us a shout. Don't struggle. Let us know and we will do our best to help you.
And there's a few sections we want your feedback on as well, which we've actually not done yet, but we want hints and tips. We want to know what makes life easy for you. Like one I heard last week, you're in a hotel, you haven't a clue which is your door, just put an elastic band or something small on the handle so that you can find your room when you're looking for it when you've had a couple to drink. So let's have them tips. We're going to put them on the future podcasts as well.
And if you want to join in with the Over to You section, like Louise Townsend did, then do a recording and send it in to Michael, and we'll do our best to fit it into one of the podcasts for you.
And again, our feedback as well. We've had some great feedback on the last couple of podcasts, including from Nick in Washington and Ian McNamara from Birmingham. And we've got a great interview, which we wanted to put on this time. Not an interview, sorry. It's a email from Joan Clark, who was a games maker at the Paralympics. We're not going to be able to fit it in this time. So sorry, Joan, but we are going to read it out in its entirety on the October podcast.
But without you, we can't go any further. We love doing these podcasts, but we need content. And it's your association, SVOPA. So please help us out. Get in touch. Give us your news items. Give us your feedback. Let us know whether you're enjoying it. If you're not, what would you like to change?
Right. So the important contact details are, the email address is podcast@svopa.co.uk. You'll actually see sometimes we'll use newsletter as well, because that's for goes out on the newsletter we send out. Also, we've got the website, www.svopa.org.uk. We're also looking to update that as well. So if there's anyone who's good at that sort of thing and wants to get involved, give us a shout on there as well. You can follow the association at SVOPA on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Ike Allen, IKEALLEN.
You can follow me on Twitter at Joanne Fishwick.
And also, as I promised earlier, you can get in touch with myself on 0161 287 1841 or text or call me on my mobile 07930 444 656, or you can write to me at Michael Allen, 3 Consort Avenue, that's Royton, R-O-Y-T-O-N, Oldham, O-L-2-5, S for Sierra, E for Echo. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Like I said, it's your podcast, it's your show at the end of the day. We just bring it all together and have a great time doing it.
We do, yeah. So please get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
And we look forward to seeing you all, as many as possible, in Tynmouth and Gateshead. And there is a competition. We should have mentioned this earlier, but we forgot.
There is.
On episode 3 podcast, there is a competition. Unfortunately, we're not telling you what it is on any mean apart from the podcast, because it's to do with the podcast. So check it out and get your answers into us as quick as you can. And we'll be announcing the results at SVOPA Live, which we're going to be doing that at Tynmouth.
We are. That should be really good fun.
We're going to get more people on there. It should be a good laugh. So hopefully see you all soon. And it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.